Practice is simply living our life without illusions that harm us and harm others. Sitting is probably the most basic part of our process, but the way we treat ourselves and treat others is equally important. And how we see that is our work in practice and with our teacher. That's a quote from something that Joko said, a short video, which at some point soon there'll be a link to on our website. Practice is simply living our life without illusions. Unfortunately, our illusions seem true for us, seem natural for us much of the time. Much of the time we're not present except through the fog and filter of our illusions. We're not willing, able to be, if I'll say it, still and spacious as our life is. Instead, we limit our life to our illusions and then do all sorts of things harming ourself and others, treating ourself and others in all sorts of ways that cause stress and suffering because of these strongly held, strongly insisted upon illusions. So as we sit, especially as we're sitting in Sesshin, one of the most valuable aspects of what we're doing is being still, being present. That's why sitting is a basic, most fundamental aspect of our practice, because in sitting we have the support of our, if I say it, physical, mental processes of all the aspects of being human to touch, rest, be the stillness that we are. And it's not a matter of stillness as opposed to movement, because as we discover in sitting, being still is embracing and being intimate as a universe that's always ongoing change. And yet, it's just this moment. Usually we go the other direction. By that I mean, we usually are caught up in all sorts of movements, mental, physical, emotional, conceptual, and so forth, all sorts of ways to speak of them. And even when I use a word like stillness or being present, we think of that as something other, different, in opposition to the rest of our life. It's not at all that way. It's analogous to those terms that you know of form and empty, or if I use another word, form and spaciousness. Stillness is allowing ourselves to touch, to sense, to experience the spaciousness of this moment of our life. That spaciousness has room, if I say it in such a way, for all sorts of arising, passing, because it's not other than that, and yet it's not hindered by that. We forget or don't realize the stillness and spaciousness of our life. So in practice, in sitting especially, one of the important aspects that we attend to is letting ourself come to rest in the present moment, in bodily sense of being still. And of course, as we're bodily still, we get to notice how much we don't want to be bodily still. Well, let me say it another way, because it's not want in the sense of conscious choices, but how much a habit of agitation or chatter, whether they're physical or mental or thoughts or emotions, how much those habits almost go of themselves and we buy into them and go with them and almost believe that they are who and what we are. So sitting upright, we sometimes discover that our mouth is moving, or our body's moving, or our fingers are wiggling, or we're holding tension and we're tight, or that we're keeping thinking about Paul and John and Fred, and I try to pick names of people who aren't here, but Mary or so forth. Made a mistake, there's a Maria here. So. But many, all sorts of people that we, all sorts of the past events and future events that we start chattering about, moving about, we notice how strong and seemingly natural that ongoing movement is, and our latching on to it. But yet it's the stillness, the being present, the being spacious that allows us, that we allow ourselves to have that chatter, emotional, physical, we can allow that to arise and pass because we are present, because we are still, because we don't have to latch on to it and fear it, become angry about it, become greedy about it, or we get to notice the greed, anger, and other ways that we latch on to it. I recently read about an interesting phenomena that scientists have discovered. As some of you know, I sometimes play with some of these things, some of these concepts. And of course, if anyone here is a scientist, they'll have to excuse my playing with this by not quite giving a full and accurate description. This is one of those, as they call, spooky processes called quantum tunneling. By that, I mean this is something that is supposed to occur in the clouds of interstellar gas and space, where the rules that we think apply seem to not quite apply. Normally, certain molecules can't combine because there's not enough energy to break the existing bonds of atoms and so forth and create new ones. And it just doesn't happen. But what scientists have wondered for a long time about is we on Earth and other places can sometimes do that when there's an adequate or a large amount of heat which enables those bonds to break. And then you could combine things. We do it all the times in time when we use chemical processes to heat things up and then combine various molecules and create new combinations. And we all know about this in various processes that we do. We know it in simple cooking. We're heating things up, and because we heat them up, they combine in ways that when they're cold, they don't combine. And then we could make food in different ways. Well, scientists have wondered about how can this process occur in space and among these interstellar gas clouds where there isn't any heat or nothing that passes for heat, and yet these processes seem to occur. But they've discovered that when the temperatures in these interstellar gas clouds are so low, it almost seems like that the deep freeze slows down and stills the movement of the parts of the molecule so that they cease to be the way they usually are because they're so still, and they can do what's called quantum tunneling. And quantum tunneling means things can be either on one side of a barrier or another, but because they're so slowed down, they're so still, if I use it in the way that I want to use it, they're able to jump across barriers that otherwise they couldn't. And in a sense, they tunnel across places and appear where they ought not to be able to appear. It's in a matter of appearing, or let me say, no, that's not quite right, in a matter of where ordinarily there'd be a very low probability that they would appear on the other side of a barrier, as you know, some of you might know in quantum theory, and I'll stop with the quantum in a moment. There's a very small probability that they could be on another side, somewhere else, rather than where they ordinarily are. But because they slow down so much, this increases, they say, by thousands of times or more, their ability to appear on the other side of a barrier. In other words, to appear where they don't usually appear. Or to put it, to quote a scientist, slowing them down widens the window of opportunity for quantum tunneling by a thousand times or more. Even though, of course, they're just talking about nanoseconds, but that's a long time compared to normal, quote, normal molecular processes. The reason I bring that up, we could leave aside the science, and if you don't understand it, don't worry about it. It's not of great importance, except as an analogy. When we slow ourselves down in sitting and in practice, when we allow ourselves to be present in sitting, in practice, in our life, then the normally almost automatic processes of reactions and mind and body chatter are more accessible to us. We can, if I use the expression, tunnel into the present moment and sense what needs to be done so that we don't hold on to the greed, anger, fear reactions, so that the reactive habit can appear and not be automatically latched onto the way we usually do, but instead it can appear and disappear. It can appear and disappear, and we are free from it for this moment. And each moment that we're free of it is a moment where our illusions don't result in harm for us and others, and don't reinforce themselves, so that, if I say it in a different way, they become all the more transparent and we see them for what they are. At some point, they of themselves disappear. Disappear not in the sense that they go away, but they just are like these windows here that don't hinder us from seeing the sunlight and the lake and the green and all else. This is the importance, the value, the strength of being still and being spacious. Now, what I think would be useful today is to talk a little more about this, all of us together, so it can be something that can assist all of us to efficiently and effectively make good use of the session, make good use of our time together, but all the more make good use of your practice effort, because it truly takes a practice effort to be still. It truly takes a practice effort to for a moment go from holding on to a small self-centered idea reaction to, for that moment, opening ourself up, opening up the clutching to that, opening up the, if I use the word, mistreating ourself or others, even if it's just in our own sitting still mind, much less in our interactions. And that is what allows us to, in a way, be transformed. Or actually, there's no transformation, because it's from the beginning we are nothing but that spaciousness. But it's a spaciousness that's in the midst of our movement. It's the spaciousness of our life in the midst of stillness and movement. It's in the midst of movement, the stillness, and in the midst of stillness, movement. Okay, so I will stop here, and we can talk about this in a way that maybe will help and clarify. Yes.
I'm not sure this will help me clarify, but before you started talking about the quantum parts, I was thinking that an example of what you were talking about was a leap. Of course, that's another quantum phrase. But when I was sitting this morning and being still, it came to me a thought that I would consider a leap for me, and maybe it was because of this, you know, spaciousness. That sort of sense, but it was. I mean, I can tell you what the leap was, or I don't have to, but
that's up to you.
If you want to hear that. I'll use my example. It just leaped at me that there's no need to be thinking about anyone else while I'm sitting. Any thought that comes up about anyone else doesn't make sense. I mean, the only person that I can deal with is me. So to really try and be concerned about my sister who's having a knee replacement today, I'm not in control of any of that, and so I can just sit.
And you don't even have to think about you during sitting.
That's true, because I'm not doing anything right.
But it's very nice that to be able to have the space where that kind of realization, I don't have to be concerned about them right now when I'm sitting. In fact, there's large portions of our life, whether when we're sitting or doing other things, where we don't have to be chattering about, and I use that word, all the thoughts that come up of themselves about so-and-so and such, and about yesterday and about tomorrow. That's one of the aspects of, if I use the word, being spacious and still, is that until there's something that needs our attention, it can appear, but we don't have to attend to it. And being able to not be at the behest and control of the thoughts that come out of, habitual reactive thinking, but rather to attend to what's needed, what needs our attention in this moment, is really an important part of our practice. An important part of no longer being at the effect of the emotion, thought, chatter, if I use that word. That doesn't mean we try to stop it or fix it, but rather we can be the space in which it can appear and disappear. And its appearing and disappearing isn't ours. It isn't me that makes it appear and disappear. It's this moment. Except that we believe often that it is me. It's my thoughts that I have to do something about and I have to agree with or disagree with or so forth. Yeah. So it's nice that that comes of itself.
May sort of relate to what Belinda was talking about, that one of the things I noticed this morning was this habit of preoccupation with other people, and this habit of believing that I know, you know, what's happening with these people that aren't even here, that aren't even me, you know, however many miles away they are, this person's doing that, and that person's doing that, and I know that that person shouldn't be doing that, and it sounds like such a simple thing, but a lot of times in just ordinary life, I don't see that habit. Mm-hmm. That it, those thoughts seem like they're absolutely true, and just the simple reality that I don't know how to say this quite, but in this present moment, it's this experience that I can, if you want to use the word know. Not somebody else's, my idea of what could be happening with that other person, that it's really just right here. Mm-hmm. I find it very helpful to be able to see that.
I like the word that you used, preoccupied. If various thoughts or feelings occupy us, then we, in a sense, that's an illusion that keeps us from being where we are, because we're occupied. I'm literally occupied by those thoughts, so that we aren't where we are.
Right. There's something really, you know, Belinda's example about her sister having surgery. When somebody that I'm close to has something like that happen, that habit of just, you know, playing out what I imagine that other person's experience is, it's so it's just so commonplace that like that is a way that I know that that person, I care about that person, and yet what I see is most of what comes from that is harm in one way or another.
And it's important to see both those sides, that yes, to be able to acknowledge I care about and I'm connected and empathize with that person's condition, and then see the inappropriateness and unskillfulness of being preoccupied about it in a way that doesn't result in anything useful, and in some ways causes harm, sometimes to ourselves, sometimes to the other, and sometimes to both. So and what's important to also sense is that our practice doesn't require us to think out or figure any of this out. It's simply being here, 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 here. And of itself, we be are the life that we are, or of itself the illusions dissipate. Yes. You have to speak up so that others can hear.
Okay, I'll try that. I the idea of spaciousness right now is somewhat like this bowl, which is myself, and this say thought or situation or whatever it is that might or could be an illusion for me. But what spaciousness allows me to do is to have that same thought, but then I'm just somewhat bigger, and I just see it for what it is. And like you say, I'm here, I'm now, I see it. The example I use is my daughter and I think have become even more close since my wife died a year and a half or so ago. And I'll try to speed this up. I went to the doctor and I found out that I had a precancerous just spot on my forehead. I told my daughter about it. She says, well, I can tell you what better than that. She says, I just got back from the doctor and I've got two growths on my ovaries. One the size of an orange, one the size of a grapefruit. So they did the test. Everything came out negative. She thought that that was the best that could have happened. They drained it. They took care of it. They treated it the best they could. Well, of course, the path report hadn't come back yet. And by the time the path came back, it kind of crashed her anticipation of that it was all good and clear. And now we've got to make this decision. For myself, my sisters had talked to her about get it taken care of. It's not ovarian cancer. It's a very slow-growing cancer. She has plenty of time to make her decision, and not 15 years, but within the relative future. We talked periodically. I met when we have our meals together and things like this periodically. And she said something about she was surprised that Aunt Sue said the hurry up and get it done or something like that. And she also mentioned that she, Aunt Sue, my sister, could not have children. And she feels somewhat really like she's, I almost want to say less than a woman. That's a terrible thing to say. But she has some regrets of not having fulfilled that part of her possibility of unity. And I told my daughter, I says, you know, I says, I know what you're going through based on what you're telling me. And I can only get that through communication. But at the same time, whatever you do, your decision, that's your decision, you know, and I'm standing behind you. But if it's a year from now and you tell me the same thing about not having the children, you're being very selfish. You make the decision as to what you want. And then we'll go from there. And I guess what I'm saying is that the spaciousness that at least I think, I sense, I feel has broadened quite a bit. And it encompasses even more than that situation. But at the same time, it allows me always to be present and to not only enjoy or maybe have the joy of life and appreciating life as it is, even the giant spider I had to kill. This is big, my house. They're called a giant household spider, but I appreciated it, and it's almost like Avatar. Forgive me for killing you, but I'm sorry, you know, I return you to your energy. But I just feel that the spaciousness and the stillness allows myself to come forward in the present moment or situation as it arises, and it's in the reasons.
In a way, to say it is a little differently, the spaciousness means that we literally or figuratively can say there's a larger capacity for events that are sometimes difficult and painful to be with, but that we are much bigger than that immediate event, and yet at the same time we are just that immediate event to take care of, and not all sorts of other considerations about what if, could have, should have, how come they don't, I, and so forth. So we're both much bigger than, you use the example, that small bowl. So there's room for lots of events, all sorts of events, to arise and pass, because that's the way life is. And yet, at the very same time, at the very same moment, the whole of that spaciousness, if I say it, is in taking care of this immediate meaning, attending to, I mean taking care of, not fixing, but in the sense of being right here with this person, with life that is, needs whatever I have to do right here, whether it's sitting still or speaking or cleaning or calling up the doctor or consoling or celebrating.
Right. Yeah. Focusing on that moment.
With the, if I say, the background, the if we say it that way, the background of the spacious. So, if I go for a moment, in the quantum sense, you can be right here and yet you can be tunneled through with the rest of the universe at the very same moment, or any other spot in the rest of the universe, because you're slowed down. If I continue that analogy, you're present. So a small self-centeredness doesn't limit you. But I don't want to, I want this to be our discussing this together rather than me saying too much, because I think that'll be helpful to all of us in seeing what we need to do to continue practicing and making good use of this time together. Of sitting and all the other activities of session, which is the point of session. We come together here rather than being out boating on the lake or whatever else we wish to do, because this is a way that supports us more skillfully to be who we are. And we have space for the boats to appear and disappear.
I'm reminded of the woman that was very wise, who was grieving the loss of her grandson, and someone asked, you're supposed to have so much wisdom, why are you grieving like that? And she says, you fool, this is it right here. Mm-hmm. So can you speak about that? But maybe there's two sides.
What is there to say? You said it. When it's time to grieve, we grieve. That's exactly it. It's if we have an idea, oh, you're a wise person, you're not supposed to grieve, you're supposed to know that everyone's born and everyone dies, or some other, or it's vast emptiness and there's no person to be attached to, or some other idea about how someone is supposed to be, which is what it is, an idea, then when our grandchild dies and we grieve at the funeral, or that's just the natural human being grieving for someone that's we love. If we stick to that grieving year in and year out, then we're blinded by it. If we stick to an idea of how we should or shouldn't, then we can't take care of this moment of our life. We can't take care in the sense we can't manifest. See, then, that's exactly what Joko said. Practice is simply living our life without illusions. What you're talking about is an illusion. The example you brought up. That's an illusion. Could become great harm for the person who held it. So, in a sense, the grandmother was teaching right there, was poking right there. Not for herself, but for the person who was holding on to that illusion. We hold on to illusions, live out illusions, and often, when we don't sit, it's very difficult for us to see the illusions as the illusions. One of the things that sitting does is enables us to see the illusion just appearing and disappearing, which means because we manifest, we are still, to whatever extent we are, the capacity to see those illusions for what they are is more there. And if we see them as we see them for what they are, their strength and hold on us dissipates, so that whether when we're sitting or at other times in our life, we don't have to live out of them, even if they pop up, even if others insist on them to us, because we see them for what they are. And this isn't a matter of theory. See, this is always a matter of, in our own sitting, in our own practice, throughout Sesshin and throughout our life. Being present means we sense, taste, function as a human, not we close ourselves off and retreat somewhere to escape, but we be fully present, which means all sorts of inside, outside, arising, passing of circumstances, of conditions. And those are our opportunity, if I say it in such a way, to see how, where, what we're holding and believing. I don't say it in a way that it's not a matter of those are coming to test us or we should have those, but it's just a natural process of life. All sorts of coming and going.
I often thought when I started coming to Sesshin and beginning my practice sitting that I took the word retreat as a face value. It was a retreat. At first I thought it was a retreat, it was an escape, and the more I realized it was, I guess, expanding that spaciousness, not just here in being present, being aware, but outside of Sesshin as well, and expanding that spaciousness and awareness, mm-hmm. and not retreating from it, but coming... I don't say out into the world, but just being there for the world.
Yeah. And even though we might think, as you say, we are retreating from it, we often discover in sitting and being still and quiet, it's that we then treat ourselves with it because we bring it along for us, but we treat ourselves with it as now the opportunity to sit with it and practice with it. So, despite the retreating and attempt to escape, we discover we brought it here, if we wish to, if we do. I have nothing more that needs to be said at this time. We could continue again tomorrow, a little differently, because you all will have sat a day longer, practiced a day longer. and we'll discover what needs further clarification. So thank you all.
Copyright 2013, Eliu Genmyo Smith.